Okay, well, I'll start.
I'm Jesse. We all know each other now already.
My slides are here if you want to follow along. So I've been a long-time PhoneGap developer, one of the first since 2008. I think PhoneGap was 3 or 4 months old when I joined Natobi. Apache committer since day one, and now I am the chair of the PMC for Apache Cordova, which is mostly just an administrative function, but I do help with some of the newer committers on the project who are unsure of why things are the way they are, because I do have the entire history, whereas a lot of people who started aren't still contributing. They've moved to other things along the way, but it is good to have a historical background of why some things look strange if you don't know the history of how we got there. So, a long time ago, 3.0, in fact, when you created a PhoneGap app or a Cordova app, you got all of the plugins and everything was built in. And we realized that that wasn't going to scale. So since that day, that was when we broke all the plugins apart. But still, a lot of people don't have a strong understanding of how they work. And I think it's the most powerful feature of Cordova is that you can actually execute the native code on the platform that you're familiar with. And maybe you don't understand Android, but you're good at iOS and you know that framework. You can actually come out with a plugin, and then hopefully somebody else will come along and send you a pull request to add Android support to your plugin. So plugins are all installed via NPM. We used to have our own registry for a while, and we realized that, you know, why keep two registries when NPM does such a good job? So everything is on NPM. You can also install directly via the GitHub URL. So this is, you know, behind the scenes, we're actually using NPM install to do the installation of the plugin. So it makes sense that we support the same ways of installation. And you can also install directly from your own clone, so something on your file system. And this is a really good way if you're actually going to be developing a plugin. And one of the lesser known features here is the link flag. So if you use the link flag, what actually ends up happening is you can change the native code in your relative folder and have it reflected in the actual project that you're working on. So you can have your test project that you're continuing to run, and every time you rebuild, it's actually doing a link to the code that you've changed. Unfortunately, this doesn't work for JavaScript because the JavaScript interface gets wrapped beforehand, so there's an extra step for JavaScript. But as far as the native code, it's really effective this way. So plugin discovery, these actually both end up being the same link effectively. Let's see, let me escape here. So you can see, if you go here, you can see it's actually searching NPM right now where it says loading. I don't know why it's taking so long. But we have some 4,000 something plugins here. I might be having that's why. You want to know my room number? Now it should load. 4,546. I think there's like a few more were added today. So this is actually searching for anything that uses Ecosystem Cordova and is a plugin will show up in that search. So if you use those meta tags in your package.json when you publish, it'll show up as a plugin. So we have a collection of what we call the core plugins, which are very well used and supported by Apache Cordova and the team. Some of the most powerful ones are file transfer. These are really big. If you need to, for example, store images or store large files, the file plugin is very handy. The dialogues is an interesting one because it sort of mimics the same features as window.alert, except for in iOS there's this issue where alert will always say index.html as the title of the alert, and that sort of kills the premise of I'm a native app. You know, if you see this pop up and it says index.html, your users might look at that and say, what's this? So it lets you customize the actual title and text and buttons that are shown. Battery status is, on Android, there are some issues where it potentially actually drains the battery by listening to the battery, but this is like a deep in the Android API. There has been some concern in the past. I'm not sure if that's still an issue, but something to be aware of. So 4,573, so we got a few more since 2 days ago. So if you're authoring a plugin, the first thing that you need to define is the actual XML inside plugin XML. This defines the ID for registration and discovery, a version number, so you can keep track, author repo, just like package.json, and in fact some of this information is duplicated into package.json when it's published to npm. So you list the platforms that you support, you list the native files that you're going to use to actually supply the implementation, and you specify the end file name. So you can also refer to what libraries you need. You can also specify permissions that you need. So permissions will be written into the application configuration when the plugin is installed. So for example, if you're installing the geolocation plugin, then there's some extra permissions for accessing geolocation that need to be added to the application. So JS modules defines the JavaScript interface that you're exporting and how users will interact with your plugin. And this was covered earlier and very well, so I won't go into too much there. Another powerful feature is hooks. Hooks don't get a ton of exposure because they're sort of a geeky low-level thing, but they are quite powerful. So if you need to do some transpiling, you can actually do it in a hook. If you want to do some code verification or something else, you can do it in a hook. And unfortunately, a lot of build services don't actually support hooks. Like PhoneGap Build doesn't, because we're careful not to execute unknown code on the server, which is actually what hooks are doing. So you also, as a user of plugins, might want to look at the popularity of plugins and look if they are using hooks, because hooks will run on your machine. So there is potential for danger.
Yeah. Is this because it may contain unsafe code, which can
Yeah.
The hot
stores. Yeah, so popularity will usually like flush those out, like, and we would try to contact NPM if we saw a plugin that was doing something that we thought wasn't good. And as far as I know, that's never happened. But it's just, I mean, the same issues exist in NPM in general. But it's something that everyone should be aware of. So all of the core plugins that I listed before are all available on GitHub. And this, I think, is the greatest resource to a plugin developer, is actually seeing how you can do all the different things inside of a plugin. So I won't spend a ton of time here because you already did and did a very good job of it. But here's a plugin XML, and it has the metadata that I described, and then it's also got the JS module. So this is referring to what actual JavaScript is going, or file is going to be copied over to the project, and it's going to be exported as a device object. For Android, we're going to do some things in configuration. We're going to add this feature, which is device. We're going to specify the Android package, and the source file is this file. And these files are all inside this repository. And this is the target directory for that file. Similarly, on iOS, you have a header file and a source file, but most everything else is the same, right? The module. And if we jump to those files, device is actually interesting on another level for plugins, because it does something that most plugins don't do, and that's it runs before device ready fires. Most other plugins aren't available until device ready happens, but in this one case, we actually expect that the user is going to want to know some things about the device that they're running on, and so this is a pre-device ready plugin. And actually, let's dig into how that's done. It's actually in the JavaScript, so I believe it's been a while. So it has a channel on Cordova Info Ready. So there's this not necessarily well-known event that happens in the lifetime of a Cordova app before device ready fires, where Cordova Info Ready fires, which means that the actual bridge is capable of taking messages. It's just not, the device ready event has not fired yet. So this is the opportunity for this plugin to actually do its work. And that's the moment where device is created on Cordova Ready. It subscribes, and then it gets information. This plugin, actually, I find a little bit confusing because it uses an object, and there's only ever one. And I'm sort of old school with, you know, not being object-oriented when you don't need to. But it is what it is, and it works. So I won't complain too loudly. And I think you did a good job of already explaining the native side of the plugin, so I'll just jump back to here. And also Plugman was described in good detail. Plugman was originally conceived as a way for developers who weren't necessarily buying all of Cordova. So if you wanted to build a Cordova Android app and you didn't care as much about the other platforms, you could actually use Plugman to install a particular plugin for a particular device. So you can have sort of a pseudo Cordova project, and you could actually mix some native code in there as well. And the assumption is that you're an Android developer, you have an existing app, you want to add maybe one or two views to your application, which are Cordova views, and you want to use plugins in there, so you can still install there. But behind the scenes, Cordova is actually using Plugman to do the work. Plugman can help you create your plugin, as seen earlier. Dependencies are an important part of plugins. In fact, I think it's a perfectly valid use case to define a plugin which just has dependencies. If you always use device, status bar, geolocation, and media, then why not make a single plugin which just has dependencies on those, and you get them all every time that you install this plugin? So I have actually done that in the past when I wanted to run tests on a whole bunch of plugins. So I had one plugin which had dependencies on all of the core plugins. So here we are adding some functionality to a plugin as described earlier. I'll just skip a little bit. Sending data back. This was covered quite well. The only thing I would add is that you have an opportunity to keep the callback. So in things like when orientation changes, you don't want to register for that event, have it happen once, and then have your callback thrown away. So if you call result set keep callback as bool to yes, which is true in other languages, that callback will not be discarded. So every time the orientation changes, you'll get that event in your JavaScript. So we sort of walked through the iOS bridge already. Mainly, you don't really need to know much other than the mapping of the JavaScript name to the class name on the native side. So I won't go into detail here, but I think the debugging stuff that I'll get to later will sort of fill in a part that was missing from earlier. So I'll focus more there. Publishing your plugin, so NPM. Everything to NPM, you need a package.json if you want to publish, and Plugman can do that for you. So create package.json, which was demonstrated earlier as well. And just generally thinking about what plugins can do. People think about adding functionality to your application, exposing device features. But plugins are also capable of rendering to the screen. So in case of the status bar, you can completely do that. You could also have build time functionality via hooks. So thinking about plugins not just as exposing native code to JavaScript, and thinking about them more as things that can accomplish stuff at different times, I think is important. So you can actually do some work when your plugin is installed. You can actually do some work at build time or runtime. So runtime can be UI frameworks or MVC helpers. You can expose native functions. You could do analytics and provide hooks for quality assurance, debug logging. At runtime, you can transpile. You can actually use, you know, modern JavaScript everywhere now, so this is less of an issue. I don't think CoffeeScript exists anymore. It should be gone by now. You can do some web packing, you can do some parcel.js wrapping, And you can actually do quality checks to make sure I'm not going to build if there's an error in JavaScript, right? Or if you didn't meet the linting requirements. At install time, you can bundle other plugins, as I described earlier, or you could provide tests for other plugins. And actually, if you look at the core plugins, they all have their own test suite built in, which is a sort of a child-dependent plugin, or a child plugin that has a dependency on the parent, right? So when you run tests, it actually runs against its parent plugin. And I can show you a little bit of that later on. But first I wanted to show a little bit more in-depth plugin. So I wrote this a while back, and I haven't updated it in a while, and it kind of shows, and I'll show you one of the issues with UI frameworks. And if you're actually doing plugin UI stuff, you have to keep up with the screen, the scale, the size of the window, the way things look. So that's something that you need to be aware of. So you can install via this. I've actually got it. Let me see where I am here. So I have a project here. And I've got the PG sidebar installed already. And I can show you this in code. So if you actually, back to that repo, there's actually a demo app in that repo if you want to try it out. So essentially I've got this little bit of code here. Sorry. Let me just make sure this is right. Actually, I think I've modified it inside Xcode. So I'm just going to open it straight up in Xcode, and we'll run it there, and then we can get into debugging stuff as well. So just a quick to show you how the app works. It was already running. So what the demo app actually does is it calls Apple and gets a list of applications that have the word Cordova in them. And this is just so I have something to display in my list. The issue that I was trying to solve with this is there used to be a lot of issues that people had with scrolling things, especially if some things on the page were static and other things were scrolling. And there was all kinds of solutions that people came up with that were sort of using, you know, JavaScript interval to see where we should be, and people invented their own momentum scrolling, and they tried to match Apple's scrolling exactly and to varying degrees of effectiveness. But this actually, what it does is it creates a list, and it actually puts it on the screen and somewhat behind, so it's like a panel. And the scrolling here is like perfect because it is the native scrolling. So the interface for this is really just here's a list of strings, render them, and when the user selects one, tell me what index they chose. And so I'm able to pass this back into the JavaScript in my HTML layer and see it. And I also have the ability to hide here. Now you can see that there are some rendering issues because this is an iPhone XS, and it doesn't have this gradient effect, which I've mimicked so that I could look good on, I think it was an iPhone 8 at the time, running iOS 9. So if you're going to venture into the UI category, you have to be careful. There's also this whole space at the top didn't used to exist, right? So how would I know? So I've got some rendering issues there. Another thing to be aware of is there is no standard for what other plugins are also changing the user interface. So an issue that I had was if I had the status bar plugin installed, I couldn't actually interact with this. And that's because the status bar puts another layer on top which catches scrolling. So I had to be aware of what that plugin was doing and make sure that I pushed myself to the front. So those are just some of the things that you need to be aware of if you're going to venture into the user interface. And if you want to actually see debugging here, we can actually jump right into my classes. So we can go to the sidebar. And we can see the show command. And so if I switch back here, I'm running on the simulator, and I go show. We can see that I receive a command, and we can actually do all our native debugging that we would expect as a native developer. So this is all still available to a plugin developer, and actually it's available to just a Cordova application developer as well. So we can step through. We can get table items. Is it going to show them to me? Not unless I inspect. So we've passed in the list, and then we're doing some nice magic numbers here. For the width is 240 always, no matter how big the screen is. And this is where we do some, like we put the table view actually on the screen, and we do make a nice drop shadow so it looks like it's behind, and we add the view, and then we bring the web view to the front. And I think I actually have an option too to put it on the other side. So but that's what you'll need to do if you want to get into the debugging of your plugins. Now, if you want to debug the JavaScript, you've got to do something completely different, right? So if I'm running the application here and I want to debug JavaScript, then I need to open our good friend Safari. I need to have gone and enabled the developer button. And then I can see simulator, and I can see my app, which is called Hello World. And then I can get all the goodness that you expect, like rolling over elements, right? I can see how the actual page is laid out. So I can do all the things that I need, including things like if I want to see what the device is, I can actually just look at that object, right? And I can I can actually call stuff right in there, and this works on a actual physical device too. I'll just quickly. Not microphone. I always do the wrong one. This is just like What's the program that you use for this? Okay, so there's my actual screen, and if I switch back to Xcode and just build for JPhone. Was that an unexpected name for my phone? And we should see it pop up here. And similarly, so we can be debugging the native code. Oh, I can't click there. I'm going to click here. And we can also attach here. So I can actually see all of these things. And they're actually highlighted on the phone, too. So even if I can interact with the phone there. So this used to be awful. This was really hard to do like 4 or 5 years ago, and it's gotten so much better. Even similarly on Android, the difference with Android is that you use Chrome DevTools instead of using Safari. But it's very much a similar experience. So back to slides here. So I installed it beforehand, but as I said before, you could use the link, and then you can modify in the actual sidebar repo side by side with the application that you're working on, and that way you actually don't have to be very careful to go and put that code back where it's supposed to go before you commit it. And go, look, my application works, but where's all my plugin code? I lost it. So plugin testing is a super big thing. If you look at all the core plugins, they all use Jasmine tests. Tests are run asynchronously in randomized order. And all of the plugins have a convention that they follow, which is they have a tests folder, and in this tests folder, the test.js defines all of their tests. There is a collection of both auto tests and manual tests. Manual tests are if you need to actually press a button to trigger some functionality. So this will render as an application. And if you look at this tests folder, you'll see that this actually is a mini application, or a mini plugin, I mean. And this plugin itself is usually given a name that has device, the thing that it's testing, and then tests. And really, it's just JavaScript files, and this works with a little something that we call Travis. So, actually, let me just jump back for a sec. In the actual package JSON, or sorry, Travis. Travis YML. Okay, in here, we define how we want our tests to run. And what we actually do is we're saying we want tests to run on iOS, we want to run on Android, actually a whole bunch of environments. And so our test is going to be npm install, and the big part is this has actually been changed quite a bit. So there's a project called Paramedic, which I started based on something that was previously written, which is called Medic. Medic was designed to be a test framework for all of the plugins. And we found this to be overburdening because if any one plugin was broken, then it would look like everything was broken. And so when I conceived of Paramedic, the idea was that it would be more closer tied to each individual plugin. And that's how we were able to get individual tests. So I can actually run tests, like if you npm install Paramedic. Actually, my slides explain this a little bit more before I... before I show you how it actually works. So, as I said, many pieces of Medic were reusable, so that's when I conceived of Paramedic. Now, Paramedic has changed a lot since I conceived of it, because my code is now like this much compared to what's been added, because it does things like it can run against SauceLab and run on actual hardware. So what it actually does is it creates a new project, it installs the plugin that you specified, it installs the tests that you specified, it installs the mobile test framework of Medic, and it creates an application. It'll run the application on an emulator that you specify and output your tests. So it has a mini server behind the scenes, and it's listening for the simulator to say, yes, the test passed, or no, the test failed. And I can actually show you that running. Do you get your picture yet? Sorry. So if I want to run the tests here, let me just... So I'm actually sitting in... Actually, just one sec. So I'm in the device plugin right now, okay? And because device follows the standard, which is to have a test folder which has a sub-plugin in it, I can actually just run Cordova Paramedic and specify the platform that I want to test, which is browser, and the plugin that I want tested, which is the local plugin. And so it's going to create the temp project. It does this in the temp directory, and then it's cleaned up after. It installs the plugin, and installs the test, and installs the framework. It sets the app start page to the test page, which is part of the framework. It adds the platform to the project, and then it spawns the browser, which was the platform that I chose to test. And it runs the tests, and you can see there's only 11 tests here, but it's all passing. And I can actually run it again, and yeah. So this is a good way to make sure that things work, and it works great in continuous integration. So every PR that's sent to Cordova plugins is actually run this way. We don't have test coverage, which would be good to add. Maybe we'll move to Jest, because I kind of like Jest a lot more these days because of its the way it treats modules and mocking. But that's a fight for another day. So that's Paramedic. Here's some bullet points that scroll right off the screen, so you'll have to read them yourself on the slides. And I'm getting close to the end of my time, so. Some things that it's missing. It only supports NPM published platforms, so you can't have a local platform that you want to test with a local plugin. So that would be nice for someone from the community to add. Hint, hint. And if you want to know how to write tests, copy what you see in all of the other plugins. And that's really the biggest, I think, resource for anyone who wants to learn about plugins is go look what's already there. Because through that collection, you can see every different kind of thing that a plugin can do. I've showed you some of the debugging already. Debugging in Visual Studio for Windows is actually even easier because there is no native layer. Windows treats JavaScript as a first-class citizen, so you can debug straight from your application code to your plugin code, and it's seamless, all within Visual Studio. The Windows bridge, there isn't really one. There's an exec proxy, which makes it look the same as the other execs, but it really is just calling your code. So it's all JavaScript at the end of the day. NPM publish to send your plugin for the world to see. Documentations, look at the standards. It's good to put the README at the root, and everyone can see how to use your plugin. There's some good resources for hooks. Hooks cover a lot of different things. So before install, after install, before platform add, before platform remove, after, before and after for every type of event that you can think of. So homework. And if anyone has any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
So regarding this, plugin for paramedic.
Yep.
So if we specify iOS or Android in the same browsers, shall I need to attach an actual device to my laptop?
It uses a simulator. So it doesn't actually run. I actually haven't tested it with a physical device. Later, someone might have added that. But when I was working on it, it would only work with the simulator and emulator, so Android and iOS.
Because also it's good now. I see the source lab, which is like a cloud desktop function. So it just also works fine. Source lab, so it goes there and execute code.
Not always. It depends on a configuration that you need, right? And there's also, that was my phone. even when it just runs on Travis, it's actually creating the simulator and running on a simulated device in Travis. So that and Android as well. So those exist. You get the benefit of not just testing, like unit testing your code, but actually testing it while it's running on a simulated device.
I know I haven't used Cordova in a really long time, but back in the day, you essentially have to access your native capabilities with phones differently, right? So when you're writing tests with Paramedic, you have to specify the platform that a given test is running in, because if you're running your tests against the iOS platform, you don't necessarily want to run tests for Android functions.
Yeah, it's only running JavaScript tests, so the framework itself doesn't really care what platform it's running on. But when you start Paramedic, you specify a platform that you want it to run on.
Okay.
So if you need to do some native code testing, then that's something that has to happen outside of Paramedic, right? And there are, like, if you look at the Android platform itself, it has a whole bunch of native tests to make sure that it can create the web view, that it can set up the bridge and all kinds of things that are very specific to Android.
Like, you'd be writing those kinds of tests on that part of the application?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because the tests do exercise the API, right? So they will call from JavaScript to native and expect a response from native. They're not mocking any of the native layer, but if you need to do some sort of deep coverage on the native side, then you're gonna have to do a little bit more.
Do you have is there a maximum size that your Cordova app can be? Because I know back in the day, it's kind of like Round Pond makes them really big. Using Cordova, like if it got to a point where it's really complicated, you're better off going native. I don't know, is that still the case?
It depends. It's really about how you architect your app. You can make a big website. You can make a small website. It depends. Like, if you're using a UI framework, you're usually going to have a way of managing what's on the screen all at once. And you probably don't want too many elements on the screen, but that would be the same for native as well, right? You're not going to have all your views present. But if you use something like Ionic or Framework 7, right, you can have a pretty large footprint of what's loaded in the browser at once without seeing any performance degradation, in my experience. Like, the devices now, compared to 4 years ago, are amazing. Like, the speed that JavaScript executes is incredible. How fast it can render to the screen, it's hard to make it not be 60 frames a second on the screen. Like, you sort of have to force bad practices to try and make it fail and make it janky, because scrolling is so much better than it used to be. Everything is rendered before it comes into view, whereas in the old days your CSS wouldn't necessarily be applied soon enough, and you might have some table rows that weren't selected, and then all kinds of weirdness used to happen, but it's gotten so good. Any other questions? Thank you.